translation then. Please, Maharaj Parikshit, inquiring from Sukadeva Goswami, please also explain what may be the common religious affiliation of human society, as well as their specific occupational duties in religion, the classifications of the social orders as well as the administrative royal orders, and the religious principles for one who may be in distress. Okay, next slide. Okay, Prabhupada's purport. The common religion of all classes of human beings, regardless of whosoever and whatsoever one may be, is devotional service. Even the animals may be included in devotional service to the Lord. And the best example is set by Sri Vajrangaji, or Hanuman, the great devotee of Lord Sri Ram. So this, of course, is probably starting off with the Sadharana Dharma. And he's defining that everybody, even animals. So if you have our graphic there, we found this interesting slide when looking up Hanuman. And on his club, it looks like Tibetan language or something. I don't know what it is. But he looks actually like what the Vanaras really look like in terms of what Ravana was thinking about. They had fangs, they had claws that would rip people to pieces. And so here, you know, when you blow this up, he looks like a really, you know, terrifying fellow. And myself, you know, to my intelligence, when Prabhupada talks about Hanuman, so many times he uses this word, Vajrangaji, or Vajrambali. And Vajra means thunderbolt. Anga means limbs or members. And ji means respectful. So many times he uses this term of Hanuman, meaning, you know, with limbs like thunderbolts. And that. And they were Vanaras, you know, forest dwellers, and great, great apes and bears. So they weren't always all that intelligent, always. Hansaduta told us, the Prabhupada said, that Hanuman's service was always very nice, but sometimes it was a little gross, like that. So even animals can be engaged in Krishna's service. Next slide, number 7. Okay, and Papa goes on, as we have already discussed, even the aborigines and the cannibals can also be engaged in the devotional service of the Lord if they happen to be under the guidance of a genuine devotee of the Lord. So this sounds very much like, of course, like 2.4.18. Kirata hunandra pulinda purkasha abhira shumba yavana kashadayaha yenye cha papa yad apashrayapashrayaha sujanti tasmai prabhavishnave namaha. Kirat Huna Andra Pulinda Prakasha Birashumba Yavan, members of the Kasha races, and even others addicted to simple acts may be purified by taking shelter of the devotees of the Lord. Due to his being the supreme power, you know, I have begged to offer my obeisances unto him. These, of course, the prayers by Sukadeva Goswami in the fourth chapter, before he starts to describe the Gita as Brahma spoke it to Narada. You know, so very, very important verse, because ourselves coming from all these sinfully inclined Western countries, you know, we can still take advantage and become devotees if we take shelter of the empowered devotees of the Lord and give up our cannibalistic activities. Okay, next verse. Next slide. In the Skanda Purana, there is a narration that a hunter in the jungle became the most enlightened devotee of the Lord by the guidance of Sri Narada Muni. Therefore, devotional service to the Lord can be equally shared by every living being. So he found a nice picture of a Murugari meeting Narada in the forest, and all the animals are running away. It's kind of amazing, because they're all, it's like a smorgasbord. It's like about, you know, eight or nine different animals, all within easy shooting distance. Very kind of strange. But Narada Muni shows up with his Bina, and Murugari's there. And then next picture shows Murugari later, before and after. It's like the, what's that magazine? Vogue. vogue, and they take an ordinary plain girl and they dress her up and cut her hair and everything else. They have a before over. So here's a Narada Muni makeover, vogue. And afterwards, with Parvati Muni, he shows up. And before, when he was killing animals and actually torturing them when he killed them, now he's even afraid of even stepping on little ants. So everybody, if they take shelter of these very powerful devotees, you know, they can be also have eligible access to devotional service. Okay, next slide. Okay, number nine. Is that our religious affiliation in terms of different countries and cultural circumstances is obviously not the common religion of humans, of the human being. Rather, the basic principle is devotional service. Okay. So it's almost like, as Maharaj Pariksit asks his questions, in many cases it seems the Prabhupada just answers them one after another in a very simple, concise fashion, taking the commentaries by the acharyas. Sadhishesha dharma. This is specific dharma. Even if a particular type of religious principle does not recognize the supremacy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the followers still have to obey the disciplinary principles laid down by a particular leader. Such a leader of a religious sect is never the supreme leader, because such a circumstantial leader comes to the position of leadership after undergoing some penance. Yeah. The Supreme Personality of Godhead does not, however, require to be under disciplinary action to become leader, as we see in the activities of Lord Krishna. So Prabhupada is saying that the general principle of devotional service, right, is to follow, to serve God, you know, to obey the disciplinary principles laid down by God. You know? And then Prabhupada is talking about specific dharmas, because we get Buddhist dharma, Taoist dharma, Confucian dharma, you know, Socratic and Platonic cultures, so many, you know, and then Hebrew and so many particular things. But Prophet Muhammad, may his name be blessed, he did austerities, you know, then he got the position of being able to dictate these things. As look at it one after another, Buddha went and did austerities, you know, and they became the leaders like that, you know. So, and they give specific, you know, disciplinary actions. So even if one is following this, you know, that also can't be the general, what, religious affiliation, you know, because even they have to do austerities to satisfy a supreme authority like that. So Prabhupada's bringing it back to devotional service. Number 10. The occupation of Shreninam, the general occupational duties for the three castes. The occupational duties of the caste and orders of society, following the principles of livelihood, also depend on the principle of devotional service. Yeah. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is stated that a person can achieve the highest perfection of life simply by awarding the results of his occupational duty unto the devotional service of the Lord. So generally speaking, that the Varnashram Dharma system is pretty much aimed at what regulating sex and money. It's kind of like most of society is based upon those two things. There was this thing that hackers knew that before, that most passwords, most people used either one of two words for their password, either sex or God. It's very interesting. Sex or God were the two most common, you know, passwords or variations of those. You know. So that's what it kind of comes down to in the whole reality, is sex and God. But within material life, and sex and money. So regulating those things, and of course occupation, that's why we engage in our occupation, to a large degree to earn our money. You know. And then with the money and everything else, of course, then we can have a comfortable, you know, romantic relationship like that. So all of these occupational duties of the caste and orders following principles of livelihood also depend upon the principle of devotional service. When we connect it all to Krishna, of course, it becomes very, very nice, the sex and the money. There's a nice picture of one Raja, Maharaja. he has to be the leader. He has to set an example. His life is actually not his own if you become the king. Number 11. People following, in Critch Ratio, people following the principles of devotional service to the Lord can never be put into difficulty. And thus, there cannot be any question of Abhad Dharma or religion in distress. We get a picture here of the same thing of Sita receiving the ring from Hanuman. So, of course, Sita is a wonderful example of somebody who's following, you know, Dharma like that in every aspect and so on. And, of course, it appears she was put into the most, you know, distressful situation. She didn't eat for the entire year. She refused to eat anything in Ravana's house like that. And she didn't change her clothes, and her bathing was very minimal, and everything else. She didn't have any associates. She was sleeping under a tree, and nobody to talk to. You know? So it seems that she was put into distress. You know? But her dharma, devotional service, was to Mamna Bhavama Bhakto Madhyaji Manamas Guru, was to always be bowing down to her husband and thinking of him, and in so many ways, you know, serving him. So there was no impediment for her doing her dharma. And actually, of course, because Sita was kidnapped, that was how the demigods were able to regain the universe. When Sita was being kidnapped by Ravana, you know, everybody wanted to help her, all the animals, the demigods, you know, everybody, but they were all just terrified of Ravana and his power. And so when she was crying out, you know, Ram, Lakshman, please help me, you know, then it said that the entire universe went off of its axis. Her cries were so intense and so pitiful that the entire rotation of the universe came unbalanced like that, you know. So everybody was just so upset, you know. And then Brahma was saying, he said, yes, this is horrible, this is terrible. And he said, but our purpose has been served. Ravana is a dead man. Yeah. So that was the entire purpose, that Sita went through all these things just to arrange the situation, you know, where Ravana would end up fighting with a human being. So in that situation, or Draupadi, the same thing, she never lost faith in spite of all these difficulties, that ultimately Krishna was in control. So therefore there was no Abhad Dharma. Her dharma was the same. And the happiness and distress were superficial things that they were adjusted like that. Okay, we go on here. Number 12? Yeah. I think Papa finishes off the purport here. As will be explained in this book by the greatest authority, Srila Sukadeva Goswami, there is no religion save and except the devotional service of the Lord. This may be presented in different forms. Yeah. And so for animals, it may be presented one way. The animal, he may feel his responsibility to warn people when some stranger's coming like that, or to protect the children when they're you know, in some difficulty around the house, you know. Or even a bull. Somebody was making this point, maybe Mother Malati. But even an animal, you know, he knows, he feels when he's loved, when, you know. So a bull, he may work all hard all morning, 4 hours with his friend, pulling the plow and working. And then he's done a hard day's work, and now he feels happy, he feels satisfied that he actually contributed. And he's, you know, he's respectable, and now he can rest and enjoy himself, meditating on whatever he meditates on while he chooses his food. So everybody can get some kind of position, and it's different for different people. Of course, this leads to the whole thing of interfaith dialogue, you know, and which is a very, very, very nice area of preaching, because these are already people on some level of realization. And so preaching to them and talking with them, it's a whole art to, you know, be able to find connections and be able to work, cooperate together, you know, more and more like that for developing your devotional service. So what we did after this, next slide, for our own interest here, because he wanted to kind of like maybe look at the questions all at all at one perspective and see what his questions were covering, the kind of content, if there was some system. So we kind of extracted the questions out and condensed them as we understood them, even, you know, from the prayer force and everything else. So this is Srimad Bhagavatam 2.8, 7 through 22. Of course, this is right after the description of the Bhagavatam from Brahma to Narada. So the chapter started with this question by Maharaj Pariksit. How did Narada explain this? Brahma told him, go explain this, you know. So how did he do it? And the purport probably said this will be explained throughout the other cantos of the Bhagavatam. Yeah. So in these questions, we see again and again and again, you know, that Maharaj Pariksit says again, O best of the Brahmanas, equal to Brahma. So again and again, maybe almost every single question, he first off puts this perspective on it, the attitude, the buddhi, the attitude, the perspective. And on the attitude, that basis, then we think, you know, manas, like that, so on. Which is bigger than which? How can I get this? How can I get that? The first principle in acquiring knowledge in the 15th chapter, etc., etc., yeah, is humility. Humility. The first principle, maybe 25 or something principles. You know? So the attitude of the speaker, the teacher, the attitude of the student is super important. Super important. You know? Just the facts, ma'am. The word fact means to manufacture, to create. Manufacture means to make by hand. So the facts, what you create, and you create them depending upon your attitude. So it's very important that the whole attitude here is very respectful and very appreciative of the qualifications of Sukadeva Goswami to answer the questions. So his first question, he starts off, does the transcendental spirit soul acquire the body accidentally or by some cause? Accidentally or by some cause? And then next, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu has a gigantic body according to his function. Yeah? If it is not the functional size, what is the specific difference between the Lord's body and ours? Yeah. And pretty much the next chapter is answers by citing the Lord's version or something like that. And it seems these first two questions are answered there. Like that, he starts off by answering these two questions, and he says that the spirit soul it gets entangled because of the Lord's energy. You know, because that, without that, there's no possibility for us to be in Maya. You know? But because we want it, then Krishna creates this situation where we can act out our little desires. You know? Maybe somebody sees, you know, some fellow sees his wife wants to have a fight. You know, she's going to pick a fight with somebody, you know, express herself. So, okay, so he gets into it. One grihasta told one young devotee just getting married, he told him, he said, you got to understand that fighting is a fine art in marriage. So many things, you know. We see that somebody wants something. So Krishna sees we want this material life, everything else. And he creates a situation where we have impetus to become attached to it and believe it's real and get into it and have a good time acting like mommy and daddy and carrying on like anything. You know? So he answers that question. And then he also answers the Garbhadakshaya Vishnu's body, because the tremendous amount of the next chapter is a description of how Brahma actually saw Garbhadakshaya Vishnu and the whole situation of Vaikuntha, and then he could understand that, yeah, it wasn't just the size, that Garbhadakshaya Vishnu has a whole different abode like that and so on. It has a whole different nature than the living entities. So he goes from the Atma to Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. Next he asks about the Kshuradakshaya Vishnu. Please explain the super soul and the Lord of all energies. He's explaining the super soul and the Lord of all energies untouched by his external energy. Are all the planets and planetary systems with their respective governors really situated in the gigantic body of the Virat Purush? So we've gone from Atma to Garbhadakshaya Vishnu to Kshuradakshaya Vishnu now to the Virat Virat Roop, like that. Yeah. Okay, next slide, number 14, if you please, Master. Okay. Then he goes into time and karma, because we have all the elements, more or less, you know. Have all the elements there, the jiva, the paramatma, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, the planets. And now the natural thing is, well, how do they work? How do they act together? And you ask about what is the kalpa, the duration of time between the creation and annihilation. He asks, explain the vikalpa, the subsidiary creation and annihilation, the nature of past, present, and future, the duration of life of the different living beings, the cause of the different durations of time, both long and short, the beginning of time caused by karma, describe how a proportionate accumulation of karma acts upon the desiring living being, promoting or degrading him. Yeah. So time and karma is basically the same thing. Now, time is the external manifestation. Kapila explains, time is the external manifestation of the Paramatma. If we look internally, we see Paramatma. Look externally, we see the material nature being manipulated. And so then, what is time? And basically, time is growth, existence, and dwindling. You know, creation, maintenance, and destruction. Rajas, Sattva, and Tamas. So karma, time, you know, the same thing, and it's the Paramatma working on all these things. Okay, what else does he ask? Number 15. Then he says, describe the creation of Bhupatala, Kakup, Vyoma, Graha, Nakshatra, Bhubritam, Sarit, Samudra, Dvipanam, Sambhava, like that, and Okasham. Describe the underneath the earth, the four sides of the heavens, the sky, the planets, the stars, the hills or mountains, the rivers, the seas, the islands, and the inhabitants. So when I was going through this, because we're on the fifth canto now in our Mahabai Baba thing there, and it's quite interesting. Really, it's like almost essential to look at Sariputta's sacred universe movie. It's on YouTube there. You look at that, then it's, you know, much clearer, because he has all the pictures and diagrams and the movies of this stuff moving, so you can see what it's talking about now. You know? And he also gives some very, very important perspectives on it. So then the whole thing becomes much clearer. But one thing that was coming up is describing, you know, Jambudweep. It's describing all the islands. And on Jambudweep, there's all the varshas. But it says this varsha is divided by this mountain, or has this mountain, is divided by this river. Then all the different islands are divided by oceans. So you're kind of wondering why he's talking about the rivers and the mountains. You know? But then coming back to this, this is exactly what Maharaj Parikshit should have asked, you know. Maybe like 4,000 verses before, you know, we're getting around to the answering this question very specifically. Because Maharaj Parikshit says, I've heard in general, now please give me more details in the fifth canto. Give me more details. So repetition, echo, so common in the Vedic education like that. So in the fifth canto, it looks like, you know, it's very similar. That the structure of the description of the universe follows right in with this particular verse like that. Okay, next Gumbar here. Where are we? Yeah, we'll go down. Yeah, slide number 16. Okay, describe the inner and outer space of the universe by specific divisions. And probably since a scientist, they talk about the external, you know, the outer space, but they can't talk about the inner space. So does that mean, I guess that means, you know, maybe the subtle psychological elements, and then also beyond that, you know, karma and things like that to some degree. Okay? The character and activities of the great souls, the castes and order of social life. So it seems like here maybe he's kind of repeating himself. He's already discussed this, now he wants to hear about it again. Kind of, what's the word? Repeating, reiterating. The caste and orders of social life. Please explain the yugas, This is time again, huh? And yuga avatars. Please explain of human society, general dharma, specific dharma of the three classes, this is today's verse, of the three classes and the king, also dharma in distress conditions. Okay, that was karma, karma, dharma, from the same thing almost. Okay, 17. Kindly explain all about the elementary principles of creation, tattvanam, the number of such elementary principles, parishankhyanam, their causes and their development. Then, very important question, the process of devotional service. Okay? Then he goes into what's called Hatha Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga. The method of mystic powers, what are the opulences of the great mystics, and what is their ultimate realization? How does the perfect mystic become detached from the subtle astral body? Yeah. Okay, slide 18. What is the basic knowledge of the Vedic literatures, including the branches of history and the supplementary Puranas? Please explain unto me how the living beings are generated, how they are maintained, and how they are annihilated. So a lot of these questions are kind of like redundant or overlapping. Tell me also the advantages and disadvantages of discharging devotional service unto the Lord. When you hear that, it sounds like, you know, the disadvantages of the devotional service, like too much Mangalarti, too much Four Principles, you know, you go nuts or something. But as I remember what Prabhupada says there, he explains that it means what are the obstacles, you know, what are the obstacles in the process of discharging devotional service. Yeah. Okay. Oh my goodness, what happened here? Okay. Okay, so slide number 19, I guess we're on. My thing jumped around without my permission. What are the Vedic rituals and injunctions of the supplementary Vedic rites? What are the procedures of religion, economic development, and sense gratification? Getting dharma. Please also explain how merged in the body of the Lord, living beings are created. Creation, where we come from, how do we get entangled here? How the infidels appear in the world. Also, please explain how the unconditioned living entity exists. It's kind of like Chaitanya Charitamrita. Also explain how the unconditioned living entity exists. Okay. So that's kind of the next last slide there is number 20. Yeah. So going ahead then, we were looking at the next chapter, and I get my pop up my thing here. Oh, my goodness, my robot's not being gentle and what's the word, submissive. Okay, I want to go over to Canto 2. Oh, whatever, Canto 3 will do it. Yeah. I go to the top of the page, and I go to the Srimad Bhagavatam. That's Canto 3. Yeah. Okay. So, Canto 2, which we're on here, the next two chapters are titled, Answers by Citing the Lord's Version, and Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. So we're mentioning that in the next chapter, Sukadeva Goswami will answer the first question, how the living entity becomes entangled, and then he'll answer the next question of what is the Lord's position, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. Is he just bigger than everybody else, like an elephant's bigger than an ant? Yeah? Or is there something specific? And that's where the four nutshell verses appear. And Brahma sees in great detail all the personal aspects, personal features of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu Loka, Vaikuntha. Yeah. And then at the end of that chapter, chapter 9, the next chapter, then Sukadeva Goswami says, now I will answer all the rest of your questions about the creation of the universe, like that, you know, one after one. And in 2:10, he starts describing Srimad Bhagavatam. I think it's the real explanation of all these things. And he says that it includes a little bit of the pedigree, and he says that it includes 10 features. You know, Sharga, Bisharga, Poshanam, what's the word, Stanam, Manvantar, Ashraya, like that. And so the 10 cantos are given these names, right? And Sridhar Maharaj, Sridhar Swami, currently says that each canto focuses on a different topic. And Jiva Goswami apparently says, well, actually, no, many things are discussed. And so Prabhupada caught in between all the acharyas. He says, this canto can be called, like that, Sharga. This canto can be called Visharga. You know? So that's what, I'm wondering where the names come from. But it comes from the 10 principles, like that. And most of them are creation. The Sarga is a creation by Vishnu. Visharga is creation by Brahma. The next one, I forgot what it's called, but basically it's actually the creation of a third order, because then the Manu starts to create all the living beings like that, and so on. Then after that, the rules and regulations, once it's created, run the whole thing. You know? And then special care for the devotees, or attention for devotees who are serving the Lord, because they're actually in a kind of a separate thing from all the rules of Manu. And then specifically, what is the goal of all these things, and so on. And at the end of the 10th chapter, then... into this canto, the sages Maitreya, of Shonaka, it cuts back whoever's narrating. Sukadeva Goswami narrated the Maharaj Parikshit, and they are somewhere, I'd rather talk about somebody. Anyway, it cuts back to Shonaka and the Rishis, and they're Prabhupada says it seems they're getting a little bit like, you know, tired of hearing about Krishna's relationships in terms of the creation of the material world. They realize it's important. But they're also in a level where they can take advantage of higher knowledge. Because somebody in a very low level of consciousness, they just have to understand how there is a controller behind everything, and he knows what's happening, and he's going to punish the unjust, and he's going to reward the just, and he's going to take you to some higher level of consciousness or personal relationship like that. So maybe very simple religions or, you know, for different people. So they're on a higher level. You know, for example, Prabhupada gave us, he saw that we were qualified to receive Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So he gave us a whole summary of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which is what extract of the whole Bhagavatam, the essence, like that, you know, so on. So the complete science of God, you know. So these questions we can see are all, you know, pretty Upanishadic, you know, pretty simple like that. But then what happens is the rishis, they say, well, what happened when Vidura met Maitreya? You know, Vidura was very elevated devotee, you know, and he met Maitreya. And they're interested in Maitreya because Maitreya heard Uddhava's questions, you know, to Krishna, the very, very last. Krishna's going to leave, and Uddhava's trying to squeeze in one last question here. And what the answer is Krishna's position in Dwarka. Because Brahma only saw Krishna's position in, you know, what is Svetadvipa, wherever it is, Garbhadaksha Vishnu Loka, you know. And so is there something more than that? Because again, some people say, you know, Krishna is the Hindu love god. He's for those people who are too attached to romance. And so there's some facility offered to them. But then Krishna was revealing to Uddhava, no, my position in Dwarka is actually more advanced, more wonderful, more natural, you know, more elevated. And so he explained some of that, and Maitreya was there listening, you know. And so he heard it. And so Vidura, you know, couldn't hear it from Uddhava, so he went and heard it from those explanations from Maitreya. So the sages, they ask about this. They want to hear some little bit higher knowledge, and not Sahajya. Because they're ready to do that. They're ready to serve Krishna in a better fashion like that, in a more appropriate fashion. And then it goes on after that to... Oh, yeah. It's Maharaj Parikshit, right there along with it, asks the same question to Sukadeva Goswami. You know? What? So he already asked all these questions, but then, you know, the sages are asking the questions later. You know? So somehow or other, when the position of Brahma is being explained, and Sukadeva Goswami says, okay, I'll answer all the rest of your questions sequentially. Then at that point, Maharaj Parikshit also says, and also, what did Vidura going to ask? Because he's heard of Brahma's position now, so it's a natural question. He's heard about Brahma seeing Garbhadaksha Vishnu Loka, and so now he's asking, well, what did Vidura and Maitreya talk about? And the significance of that is that they talked about something higher than this manifestation to Brahma, of Garbhadaksha Vishnu, like that. God is great. And that's about all the perspective we have there. And, of course, the answer is there, you know. I have some notes. My notes go, I guess he ran away. There was, okay, I listened to all the classes this week. It was very, very exciting, you know. Somebody made this point, they called and said, watering the weed. Yeah, we got this thing here, Govinda Dutt, and he mentioned this point about watering the weed. We could have a whole book on that or something. My life in devotional service, watering the weed. Very, very tricky point, no, that devotional service. That's why if we get through all the rest of these things of Sankhya and cosmology, and Giri Govardhan talking about that, these things are kind of necessary because we're standing right in front of the deities and we don't realize it is Krishna. To some degree, maybe, kind of a general sense, you know, like that. You know, one time during a press conference, one of the younger reporters was getting a little bit like insolent, impudent with Richard Nixon, and then Richard Nixon kind of paused and looked at him and said, "You don't know who I am, do you?" And the guy was a little flustered, and he said, "I can go in the next room and make one phone call, and in 45 minutes." Over 500 million people would be dead. So the reporter pulled his youthful horns in and started asking more respectful questions like that. Yeah. So, yeah, to really appreciate that we're standing in front of, you know, Radha Shyama Sundar or Radha Madhava, that we have to get free from the material world. You're getting free from it, we have to understand what it is, like the Upanishad says, you know, the negative and positive aspects of it. A positive aspect of devotional service, how to use it, you know. And so it's a big deal, depending on our position. Somebody else maybe already have gone through that. They know about karma and everything else, you know, previous lifetime. But somebody else may need to know, go through. Different analogies, different examples. I think it was Jay Jagadish or somebody was pointing out that the analogy of the prison breaks down. Yeah, it's useful. It helps fix my consciousness that we're all in prison, we're being reformed. But the prisoners know they're there like that. So the analogy breaks down at that point. So, but if you change it over to the analogy of a mental hospital, then maybe some people know they're crazy, but other people don't know they're crazy. So we get these different kind of analogies. Because of my physiology background, I know that if you take a nice sharp scalpel and make a horizontal cross cut at the collarbones, go right down the center, another horizontal cut, the whole thing opens up quite nicely, and you can see everything behind it. It's just like looking behind the television set. The old television set, you look behind, there were big transformers, vacuum tubes, capacitors, resistors, induction coils, you know, and then there's this big long cathode ray tube shooting electrons, and the final thing which conveys all the thing you're interested in, the personal relationship and everything is infinitesimally thin. So we have all these muscles in our face so you can move the face and express, you know, anger, fear, chivalry, you know, vatsalya ras, like that. So everybody has different intelligence. And when we hear these different aspects of the Bhagavatam, then we can stimulate it, and then we can see all this stuff. So now as you see yourself in the mirror, you're so attached, dressed properly, you realize this is just a thin candy covering. Behind this is fat, bones, intestines, pancreas, liver, all to communicate, you know, the spiritual world. So if I can use this television screen to communicate the spiritual world, to communicate myself, you know, like using a cell phone to generate, you know, sound, okay. You know. So different levels, I was thinking about that. It was very, very nice. I think it was Giri Govardhan talking about that, you know. And then, you know, watering the weed, Govinda Dutt, And we have to be careful about this. The whole science of devotional service. Yeah, you got to chant Hare Krishna. But then after a while you realize, well, you've got to chant Hare Krishna without offense. Oh, wait, wait a second. What are the offenses? I'm chanting Hare Krishna and becoming more lusty. Oh, yeah, because you're trying to become, you know, trying to become the supreme enjoyer of the Ras dance. You're reading about the Ras Lila chapters and having the wrong attitude. You know? Yeah. So we study the material nature. Then we go on studying it. But as we become more purified, then we actually start to understand the process of devotional service, right? And how it actually works. Different levels are described. And then when you come to the level of actual bhava and sentiments, then we have to distinguish, you know, those. Because again, you know, the sentiments may be much more subtle than gross sentiments. Yeah, but we still have things like envy and desire for pride and respect and honor and devotional service. We want to be honored. You know, we don't want gross gratification, private, but we want, you know, cooperative gratification and glorification of our ego. Prabhupada says one should not be too proud of his ideas. Yeah. Yeah. So kind of this general discussion this week has been very nice, you know, from this perspective. But again, we have our what we can take advantage of is Chaitanya Charitamrita, yeah, which is a class in the Bhagavatam, and then Rupa Goswami extracts out everything in Krishnadas Kaviraj, and then we can go right to the, some of us, you know, we can go right to the process of devotional service in different levels. Some can get initiated right away. Some people may take, I know some people may not get initiated in this lifetime even. I know one guy in Denver said he and a few of his friends have been coming to the Sunday feast for something like 25 years. They all get together and smoke a lot of marijuana before, come to Sunday feast, chant and dance like madmen, eat a big feast, and afterwards clean the whole temple up while the residents go to sleep. And very happy in this. And Mother Teresa of Avila warns about this, getting hung up on this level. Okay, but maybe then you got to die before you get it out of your system. You know? And somebody else, they're ready to take initiation, you know, Harinam Diksha. But then second initiation, is, oh, deity worship, ah, you know. And somebody else ready to become a Goswami, you know, Goswamini. You know, somebody else ready for Bhava Bhakti. And Bhava Bhakti has so many levels like that, you know. And so we have all the literature, and the Srimad Bhagavatam, the way it's being presented here, is pretty much, again, Upanishadic, very... What is the universe? What are the mystics? Explain devotional service. You know? And very good going over the basics like that and so on. But as we're ready for it, actually probably even says that if one does not give up the lower practices when he's qualified for the higher practices, it's offensive. You know? So when we're ready to take on the higher practices, if Chaitanya Charitamrita should be the bulk of our focus, then we should be reading that and studying that. And then same time too, you know, going over these other things like that from the higher perspective. So that's the only kind of thoughts I had. Anybody have any comments, questions, complaints then? Hare Krishna.
Maharaj, give me a moment here.
Okay.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. We were in Andhra Pradesh, invited by a hideous woman, life member, and... she was going to donate some land to us, and her husband had died, and in her big mansion, she had her husband's, we had covered them up with cloth. She had trophies of the animals that he had hunted, and she was hideous. I said to one of our life member Indian gentlemen, I said, she looks like a man, and he says, no, she looks like Ravana's wife. And the land donation had a lot of strings attached. But Prabhupada looked at me and he said, I always wondered why it says Pulinda Pulkasha Andhra. Now I know. They're hunters and meat eaters and tribal type people.
My God.
Yeah.
But they can all become devotees.
Did we just... Yeah. Now Krishna has his special Pulinda girlfriend. And the... Dwarka Mahishis and Radharani. There are two verses that say that they're inspired by her. There's no envy in Vaikuntha.
So, there's no what?
Envy.
Ah, yeah.
No, they're not jealous. Yeah. But also, just an outside comment, where is it, did we just cover, where is it given the 8,400,000 species divisions of life? Did we just cover that verse recently?
Yeah. I don't remember. Okay. The actual verse, I think, is
not. All right. Fauna. All right. Okay. I'm finished.
Maharaj, I have a question. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
I can hear you all correct. I'm walking out to turn my oven off here. We're baking potatoes. Honestly, I don't want them to get baked to death. Yes.
Wonderful summary. I really appreciated it. I have several questions, but I'll just ask one for now. Let's see if others have. I specifically wanted to know about Appadharma, the religious principles to be followed when one is in a difficult situation, out of the ordinary, distress. You gave a nice example of Sita, that following Srila Prabhupada's point in the purport, that for devotees there's no such thing as Appadharma because they're never in distress. So they never compromise their principles. But there was a conversation I was listening to where Srila Prabhupada was talking to some devotees, and they had mentioned this soccer team that had crashed in the Andes Mountains, and they were there for months, so they had to eat their fellow soccer mates and people on the plane. They had to turn into cannibals in order to survive, and finally they were found. And Prabhupada said, yes, in order to maintain the body, then that's sometimes necessary. And then he cited, I think it was Vishwamitra, I guess, for either Mahabharata or the Ramayana, how once he was in the desert, and in order to survive, he ate dog flesh. So he said, in emergency circumstances, then that may be necessary. So in one sense, he was talking about Appadharma in emergency situations, then the religious principles can be adjusted. And I think it's in the 11th canto where that's discussed. So I'm a little puzzled by the example that Prabhupada is giving in the purport, that for devotees, because they're never in distress, and they would never compromise their principles. Could you comment on this, or is my understanding wrong?
No, I think it's correct. It's just that a devotee sees the full picture, so he never sees anything inauspicious. He sees everything from his point of view as being auspicious. But when you get down to the separate point of view, then you see things auspicious and inauspicious from a material point of view. And so the devotee, he adopts Appadharma. Like you're saying, there's so many examples, of course, of devotees in their devotional service adopting, principles that were, for emergency circumstances like that. But the emergency circumstances are just part of Krishna's whole plan like that, and sometimes they become the most prominent, that's the whole thing. Arjuna was saying, I don't want to kill all these people, with quoting so many scriptures. But then Krishna's coming back and he's saying, that now under these circumstances, killing them and everything else is the real dharma. So that's what I would say. It's just a matter of what he sees, the full perspective. And then, he adopts. Because, for example, Prabhupada quotes the Parasara's Dharma Shastra. So it says that if maybe five guys have a partnership, and then four of them go overseas to get some stuff to make some money to come back with the partnership. And while they're gone, the government tries to attack the business for taxes and this and that, and tries to seize the whole thing. And one partner defends the whole thing. And so because of that, when they get back, he gets a certain percentage more, of the business and stuff like that, and so on, So there are different kinds of descriptions, detail given. For example, it says that Parasara says that in times of difficulty, a brahmana can adopt the dharma of a kshatriya or even a Vaishya. But he says, but he can't touch the plow, because that's considered too sinful. You know, cutting the earth, of course, you're killing so many animals. So there's certain kind of apadharma things, but Krishna has arranged for this. He's put me in this situation, so it's not apadharma, and it's not distressful, you know, like that. You know, Krishna likes to come himself and smash people. You know, he thinks about how, you know, Ravana, the guy, played this good role, you know. So he doesn't do it in Vaikuntha, you know, but from his perspective, it's a good opportunity to play like that.
Okay, thank you, Maharaj.
Yeah.
Do others have questions? I'll hold mine.
Apadharma.
Dandavats, can I add something to that?
Please go ahead.
Okay, Doug Damodava Das here.
Yeah.
It brings to mind this part of the purport that's talking about a devotee of the Lord can never be put into difficulty because he's taking full shelter of the Lord, like Prahlad. I mean, how much trouble came to Prahlad? But he's a fearless 5-year-old in the face of a demon that moves his eyebrows and the demigods are shaking. So, you know, this world is full of stressful situations. I remember Srila Shrina Maharaj was asked by someone, what about World War III, you know? And then somebody said, Srila Shrina Maharaj said, World War III, let it be. We're not concerned about that. That's a dot on a line. You know, that's an event in time. It's a blink in the eye of eternity. You know, we're concerned with eternal dharma. You know, empires come and go. You know, death. It's the common, you know, that's the common fear here. But the devotee who's taken pure shelter, he doesn't need to take something for stress. Does that make sense?
Parthasarathi Das, he was like a company? He had 130 soldiers under him in Iraq, you know. And he quotes this phrase, there are no atheists in foxholes. And he said he never met anybody who really got down to it, didn't even have some kind of like respect at least or idea for God, any, you know, working soldier. So yeah, if it presents such a great preaching opportunity. World War III, hey, great. You know, we're going to be able to preach like anything if World War III comes.
Well,
you know, people are going to be staring death in the face. Okay.
Yeah. I wouldn't. It's messy. Nuclear is messy. I mean, I wouldn't look forward to that in any on any level. But for a devotee to, you know, I remember. I'll have to confess here a little bit. I was in Silicon Valley. They're on the nuclear map, that's for sure. And so I was thinking, there's a way out of the valley, the backside. There's a mountain and a saddle where you can get out of the, you know, if you had an eight, you know, if the sirens went off and you had 18 minutes, you know, the missiles are on their way, you could jump into a car and make it to that saddle before it hit. You know, I was thinking like that. But, you know, that's not very advanced thinking. You know, I think somebody asked Prabhupada, what if, you know, the bomb is coming? And then he said something, well, I just see it as Krishna.
Yeah.
You know, he wouldn't run away. So there's one other thing I want to mention, and that is the depiction of Hanuman with all the hair. I like the Hindu depictions of Hanuman. He was half demigod, and so they have this like strong body, human-like body with a monkey, you know, sort of a monkey face, but very clean looking, and that's the way I conceive of Hanuman, not as some animal,
Although, you know, in the purport, Prabhupada mentions that even animals, but Bajaranga Bali is no ordinary animal. Some of those Vanaras were, you know, the sons of Vayu, Indra, Vishvakarma. They were not ordinary living entities. The Brahma arranged for that, knowing that later on in the Leela, Ram would, you know, they could assist Ram in the siege of Lanka. Anybody there?
Okay. Anyone else? No, he's actually on hold.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It explains very clearly that the monkeys had fangs and claws. And that's one thing that's kind of not depicted. And a lot of times Hanuman would just rip people to shreds with his claws and stuff like that.
Huh.
How come Hanuman is orange?
He's orange?
In the Murtis.
Because he saw Sita putting vermilion, kumkuma, in his heart. And he said, well, why are you doing that? He said, oh, because it guarantees longevity for my husband if I put it in my hair. And she came back and found Hanuman covered, you know, all over with it. She said, what are you doing? And he said, well, I have hair all over my whole body, so I have to cover my entire body with it. Sometimes a little gross.
Can I ask a quick question? Just a detail. In your summary, Maharaj, you mentioned about the graha and the nakshatras. At the end of class the other day, I gave my interpretation. I wanted to see if it was correct. Because it says stars and planets, so we know from the Bhagavatam there's only one sun. All the stars are actually planets. So what I understood by graha, it meant the navagraha, the planets that influence us, and then the nakshatra, the stars, that refers to the 27 divisions of the sky. Is that correct?
I don't really know. In the fifth canto, it gets even more bizarre. We're going through it, you know. And, Prabhupada basically saying, I see Prabhupada saying that different people are going to have different interests, and so some people really get into astrology for practical purposes and astronomy, but other than that, I don't know. Probably you know better than I do.
Okay. Well, it sounds like there's no other questions. I guess the devotees are satisfied. It was a very nice class, Maharaj. A wonderful summary. Thank you very much.
Thank you all very much. Ekadasi, something Ekadasi. I forgot which one it is. The Ekadasi there in Hawaii also?
Yes.
Yeah, you're Ekadasi.
Yeah. And then, what is it? We have a whole... Well, we're having a big festival we're working on here later on this month and stuff, so I'm going to get back to that now. We're going to have 40,000 people coming to the Celebrate Nashville Festival, so we're trying to make a real attractive booth on culture and the culture and world culture. Yeah.
Mars, okay, so, if I can very quickly call you after class, I just have a quick question.
Okay. What do you do with your booth?
Well, we're trying to work on it. Probably what it'll be is, well, Adideva has his changing bodies, and then we're making a banner, which will have Shakespeare at top, so people walk by, they'll see Shakespeare. Then underneath that, because in the drama As You Like It, which is kind of like the Bhagavatam as it is, that's where he has the one, All the World's a Stage, and he goes through the different ages like that, you know. And Solomon apparently uses the same thing. So that's something you can show. It's all over the place. And then Bhagavad Gita is also talking about it. You know? So we'll have that showing how this is, you know, this is world culture, this is knowledge. And then the Gita is a very, very good source of this global cultural knowledge. And the big Murti of Prabhupada. And maybe what we're going to try to do, think about this now, is blow up on vellum. Maybe like one verse of, you know, of Changing Bodies, Dekhanoshmen, with a translation, maybe like four pages or something. So people will sit right in front of Prabhupada, stand there in front of Prabhupada, and read the big letters and very, like, you know, artistic type thing, and turn the pages. And so, of course, as you're reading and turning the pages, oh, such a nice influence like that. You know?
And what's the festival called?
Celebrate Nashville. No, it's called Celebrate Nashville. And it started about 5 years ago, and we got on the ground floor. And it's just it basically showing the different cultural aspects of the city, and then culture, and avoiding, you know, race problems and promoting cultural sources. Yeah. So it is nice. It attracts nice kind of people that are open to cross cultural experiences and stuff. Yeah. As long as it doesn't rain. Yeah. Okay. So thank you so much, and we'll be listening to other classes throughout next week, and hopefully be able to participate next week also. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Thanks.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Maharaj. Hare Krishna.